Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. I think it's fair to say that Amy Lawrence is living the dream. A pioneer of sports radio and TV, she's the host of CBS Sports Radio's late-night program, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The show, which focuses on the day's hottest topics in the sports world, airs weekdays from 2A to 6A on the country's largest 24/7 major market radio network. Before joining the CBS family in 2013, Amy spent 9 years at ESPN Radio and had the distinction of being its only regular female host. Her previous sports radio jobs include stints in Providence, Rhode Island, Lebanon, New Hampshire, Rochester, New York, and Oklahoma City, where she was the first female in state history to host her own sports radio talk show. She's also done basketball play-by-play over the past 15 years and was the voice of the University of Hartford women's basketball team from 2008 to 2014. In 2015, Amy was recognized as one of the 100 most important sports talk radio hosts in America by Talkers Magazine and was, by the way, the only woman who made the list. So, Amy, welcome and thanks for joining me today. Not on a whole lot of sleep, and I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's what happens when you work these hours, but I don't mind. Thank you so much for that kind intro, Sandy. I really appreciate the invitation.
So, what role did sports play while growing up in Concord, New Hampshire, and were you a jock?
I was a jock, but I was also a girly girl. It's funny, when you work in this business and you do sports, a lot of people think you can't be both, but you really can. And we see a lot of great female athletes who demonstrate both qualities. So I did play sports, but I also played the piano and I worked on the yearbook and I was on student council, fell in love with basketball and with softball and ran cross country, played volleyball, did all the sports when I was younger. And it was more about the teamwork than it was about the competition, though I'm super competitive and just really love all of the qualities that sports can teach young people: determination and perseverance, how to communicate with others, how to work together as a team to accomplish a common goal. So I've always been in love with the teamwork aspect of things.
But then you personalized it for yourself, but you also, I gather, must have loved watching professional sports on television.
Yeah. You know, when I was 13, I fell in love with the Denver Broncos.
Why?
Well, because I was watching a game between the Broncos and Patriots in Concord, New Hampshire, with my stepdad.
So you just decided, in terms of bonding with your stepdad, I'll watch football with
him?
It's not that you had this drive to sit in front of the TV on a Sunday afternoon.
No, absolutely not. So I just happened to be watching TV with him and just really enjoyed the experience of watching and how they scored 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter to come back and win. And then a few years later, I fell in love with basketball, which pretty much changed everything. Started playing it and then also started watching the Celtics. And I'm a radio junkie because of the Celtics. We lived out in the boonies in Concord. And when
all of New Hampshire is the boonies,
well,
right?
No, it's really not. And Concord's actually the capital city, but we were way out on the town line. We had a bear in our front yard. I mean, we were out in the woods.
Okay.
And so we didn't have cable TV, at least not the cable that carried the Celtics games on a nightly basis. And so the only way that I could follow Larry Bird, who's my all-time favorite athlete, and the Celtics was to listen on the radio. And so I would do my homework at night and I would listen to the games. If they were late night games, I would be in bed, but I'd be wearing my little yellow Walkman, my headphones, so that I could follow them. And I just fell in love with the idea of a radio announcer describing action in such a way that
you could see it.
Even though you couldn't see it with your own eyes, you knew exactly what was happening. So the days of Johnny Most and then Glenn Ordway for the Boston Celtics. And I started telling everyone I was going to be the first female Johnny Most and do play-by-play for the Boston Celtics.
Were you a bit of an anomaly back then? Did you have other females who shared that same passion as you?
No. In fact, I initially started pursuing an accounting degree because I was really good at it. The whole right brain thing or left brain thing or something.
Well, that's a part of my brain that doesn't work.
So complete opposite other side of my brain. And as I was getting ready to go to school for my undergrad initially, people told me, trusted advisors, my principal, my pastor, you probably should have a backup plan because, you know, women don't do sports and they certainly don't do sports radio. And so I started the degree in accounting and I also did a degree in communications.
Did you work on the college radio station?
I did. Knowing full well that what I wanted to do was radio, I decided to go ahead and have both degrees. And I finished both. And I, you know, radio pays nothing when you first start. So in order to supplement my very meager radio income, I also did accounting jobs on the side. And I'm not sorry that I have both degrees. But I went on to Syracuse and got my master's in TV and radio. And Syracuse University in that particular school, which is Newhouse, comes with a whole nother level of cachet
of course.
Of relevance and of equity and credibility. And so by that time, I figured that I could do whatever I want to. But I'm glad that I went through the process of working it out in school and having the other degree.
But you must have been one of a kind, even at Newhouse in radio and in sports radio, right?
Well, I think most women look at the TV industry, and if they want to get into this business, even if it's sports, it's not generally radio. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's just a gender issue. I think that most men and women who get into this business, a lot of them would prefer to do TV. It's more money. It's more recognition.
It's more glamorous.
It's more glory. Oh, yeah, glamorous. But I use my air quotations because this business isn't all that glamorous. But I've just always been a radio junkie. And as much as I do TV, and I do, CBS This Morning has been kind enough to have me on four or five times in the last year. I've done some basketball games on TV. I've hosted a couple of different shows, you know, interview panels on TV. I don't enjoy it. I have far more to say than what the TV format offers, and it's way too high maintenance. It takes more time to put on the makeup than you do actually sit on the set.
No kidding. Absolutely.
Which is, I'm not sure what that says about me, but
now you wrote that no one warned you about the challenges of being a woman in a man's world.
No.
So come on, Amy, isn't that being a little naive?
No. Well, maybe it is for me. I mean, I would absolutely agree that I was naive about the business. I had no idea.
You just
assumed
there would
be nobody else
I
knew. Nobody in my life that I knew who was in this business. No one that I could talk to about it. And so when I got into the industry, even at Syracuse, I had one female who was a news director, but there were no other women doing what I did, and certainly no women doing play-by-play. So every stop along my journey, I've been the first woman to do this, the first woman to do that. I just was the first woman to do play-by-play on the Westwood One radio network. You know, the first this, first that. Name me another woman, I would say, who has more experience in the business who does radio. There are a few now, but I'm the only, still now in 2016, the only female hosting her own five-night-a-week sports radio talk show at the network level.
But in spite of not having a role model and other examples—
Role models, just not women.
Okay, but that's a big deal. That's a big gender deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless you just thought, well, I'll be the first in your head, I'm a lot older than you are. And there were definitely women in radio when I was involved
sports.
In radio. No. But I was going to say, to me, I wasn't doing sports, so it was a lot easier. I was doing news and I had a deep voice. Mm-hmm. So that what else did I need?
Honestly, I'm glad that no one told me what was coming, because if I had known how difficult the path would be, if I had known how much resistance, how much harassment, how many people were going to bet against me and tell me I couldn't do it, how many times I was going to get passed over for jobs, how often I was going to run into discrimination, whether overt or subconscious
insidious
type of thing.
Uh-huh.
If I had any idea, I might not have done it. So I'm glad that I was naive about it. And I'm glad now that I have a story that I can offer other young women or older women. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's never easy to get into this business, not at radio, where it's not about what you look like, how large your bust size is. It's not about what the color of your hair is or what you wear. It's about what you know and your brain and your sense of humor and being able to communicate with an audience. And so that's another reason why I will never do TV full time. I never want to be about what I look like. I want to be about what I know and how much work I've done to get to where
get
I am
there.
Now.
So where was your first radio job? And are you forever indebted to that person who hired you as a sports caster?
It actually wasn't in sports. So I started out in news because that was how I could get on the air. I'm forever indebted to Syracuse because that network really helped me get multiple jobs.
Well, that gives you street cred.
Yes. My first job was doing overnights as a board op and a news update anchor at WHAM, which is a heritage station in Rochester, New York. And my mom could listen to me in the driveway in New Hampshire because it's a clear channel station. So I would do my shifts with news and running the board. And then I volunteered and did sports on Saturday mornings. They let me stay an extra 6 hours, write my own sports updates. They didn't pay me, but they allowed me to stay and start working on sports updates. And so from there, I just kind of worked my way up the ladder. But I did news full time until, thankfully, I'm actually very happy that I did do news full time until the end of 2001, because I wouldn't have wanted to cover 9/11 through anyone else's eyes except as a news reporter. That was how I could contribute and be part of what was happening and inform people what was happening.
How long did it take you, and where was your first sports radio job?
Well, I did both.
Well, I mean, I understand what you did at this station.
Full-time sports job?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I would do a lot of sports play-by-play, sports updates while I was doing news. And so I made stops in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and White River Junction, Vermont, which is right on the border there. And I called a high school championship play-by-play, you know, did it for Lebanon High School basketball and was the only female ever to do that. You know, the Boston Globe sent a reporter to cover me.
Wow.
So I was doing news. I was covering, you know, news events and meetings and local stories at night. And then I would do play-by-play on the weekends. I made the jump nearly sight unseen. I guess I did have about 12 hours in Woodward, Oklahoma, which is a town with more cows than people, out near the Panhandle. But it was a 100,000-watt radio station, and it reached all the way to Oklahoma City, and it reached all of southwest Kansas, and it reached into the Texas Panhandle. And so the stick was gigantic. So I did news, and I did weather in the mornings. And then at night, I would do American Legion baseball play-by-play, high school basketball play-by-play, high school football play-by-play. And I got to do a lot of other things. I covered Oklahoma sports, Oklahoma State sports, and it was really my induction into that whole college football realm, which in the Northeast, we just didn't have a lot of college football hype and craziness.
Right,
so it's
it wasn't
different
as nuts as in the Midwest or South.
Right,
yeah.
So I spent 2 years in Woodward, and then I moved to Oklahoma City for a news job, and then as I say, well, a few months after that, 9/11 happened, and then I made the jump to full-time sports as a talk show host in 2002. So January of 2002, I was finally full-time sports and no longer doing news and sports.
Did you feel like you died and went to heaven?
I did, but I was scared to death. I mean, I'd never done a talk show 4 hours an afternoon solo. I had no producer. I'm sure I stunk at it. I mean, I shuddered to even think about what I sounded like back then. I mean, in Oklahoma, there are four sports seasons. So there were no professional sports at the time because the Thunder weren't there. So the four seasons were the football season, recruiting, spring football, and then two-a-days. And as someone who was still learning college football and learning the Big 12, I mean, it was kind of a fish out of water there, but I trial by fire. I had a program director who didn't give much advice and was really more of a financial guy than a sports guy. And I got fired a year later because the female thing in Oklahoma, very chauvinistic area. And I was the only one. And, you know, they made fun of me on the other stations. Funny now, though, they claim me because I came through and spent 4 years in Oklahoma.
So you were fired because you were the only female?
I was fired because the station wanted to go in a different direction. I mean, I was fired because I was different, and different wasn't working against the competition. And that's fine. I understand it's a competitive business. But that was the first time I got fired, and obviously rocks you when you're younger and you don't get the business.
I've been there, too.
Sure.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Amy Lawrence, who's the host of CBS Sports Radio's Late Night program After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You know, Amy, we don't know each other, and what is coming across to me is that you really have a very strong sense of self.
I do now. I didn't when I was younger.
Really?
Oh, no. I mean, like most young women, you're insecure. And you listen to what, in this case, it was men, what experienced men, veteran men in the business are telling you. And I went through a whole stretch where I changed who I was and how I did things and how I approached it. And I was listening so much to everyone else that I kind of lost myself in the process. So I would get advice from here and advice from there. And you're doing this wrong and you're doing this wrong. And maybe you should change this. Everything from, you definitely should downplay the fact that you're a female. You know, don't laugh too much on the air. You won't be taken seriously. Don't talk about the fact that you're a woman. Make sure that you don't talk anything about your personal life because nobody wants to hear about a woman's personal life. As I talk about, it was kind of subverted discrimination. But even when I got to the network level, which I started working at ESPN Radio in 2004 on a fill-in basis, even then, I was the only female there that they had doing radio, any type of talk radio. And it took them 3 years before they would allow me to talk about football. Now, nobody said to me, you don't know football, you're a chick. But 3 years, I was the only host there who wasn't allowed to do any football.
Why'd they hire you?
Because I was a female and because they were looking. I mean, the program director flat out told me, we have no female voices. We need someone. I heard you in Providence because I was working in Providence, Rhode Island at the time. I had left Oklahoma and moved back to New England. We don't have any female voices. We need one. And for 9 years, I was contract labor there and I was the only female voice that they had doing talk. I got passed over 5 times for full-time jobs. I mean, you know, and I'm not suggesting that's all because I was a female, only that as a woman in sports radio, because of the fact that it's not about what you look like and you're not eye candy. It's about what you know. There still is this idea that a whole portion of the sports radio audience, it's still this vast wasteland where it's 95% male, who listen, and a lot of them just have this idea that a woman can't possibly know as much about sports as they do. And I'm not suggesting at all that I'm not willing to fight this battle. I've been doing it for 15 years. But to get back to your original question, if you don't figure out really quickly who you are and what you bring to the table and how you want to present yourself, if you don't have an anchor and have a strong sense of self, you're going to get blown around by all of the winds, not only the winds of change in our business, but all the advice that everyone thinks that they can give you to make you so much better at what you do. And it still happens. We're in the age of social media. I get it all the time.
Well, that's a great segue into this article from Think Progress, which is More Than Mean Roundtable, that female sports writers speak up about online harassment. I think what blows my mind about this, and it's not my naivete because I've been around the block, that it is 2016. And you have alluded to the fact that it's better certainly now than it was in the past. I just wonder how much better it is. And this roundtable was that two sports reporters, Julie DeCaro and Sarah Spain, sat in a chair as men read some of the online tweets and posts about them. And I'll just read a couple of them. One said he hoped DeCaro was Bill Cosby's next victim. That would be classic. Another comment directed at Spain said, "I hope your boyfriend beats you. One of the players should beat you to death with a hockey stick." These women were harassed for simply doing their jobs. The men reading the tweets, the messages and the posts looked so miserable doing it.
They looked sick.
But it was such a shock, even though it's on some level almost de rigueur.
It happens all the time. I mean, I know Julie personally. Sarah and I are colleagues, and we work at competing networks, but we have connected on Twitter before. But Julie and I are friends, and we have these conversations all the time because she's trying to break into radio as a talk show host in Chicago. And she's taken a stand similar to that I have on issues like domestic violence and rape. And I will tell you, those tweets that those men were reading to those women, I've gotten so many different versions of those, hundreds of them, when I talk about the Ray Rice situation and how, you know, how the NFL needed to take charge of its domestic violence issue. Greg Hardy was just last year. I mean, I won a Gracie Award based on my strong takes on the Greg Hardy situation with the Dallas Cowboys. But every time I talk about domestic violence or any type of a social issue, I get the same things. Someone should beat you. I hope Ray Rice punches you out. I mean, talk about rape, the awful, terrible things that people would send you. And so social media has changed the business. Again, talking about the strong sense of self. If you don't, thick skin is the wrong word. I resent that because I am a very emotional person. And all of these things I see, I read, and they sting. They hurt. There are times when you think, how could human beings say things like this? But that's the issue with social media. It offers anonymity. It offers no accountability.
Yeah.
There is a double standard for public figures. I am accountable for everything I say, but the people hiding behind their eggs are not accountable for anything. And so it offers every Tom, Dick, and Harry this idea of freedom of speech, and there are no consequences. And so it's really changed our business. But at the end of the day, no matter how many come in, I mean, I do a lot of blocking, I do a lot of muting, I am not going to be harassed by people on Twitter. I've worked too hard to get here. I've been harassed too often in my career. I'm not going to take it on social media from someone who's not in the arena. But at the end of the day, there's always a point where I have to say, deep breath. Those people don't know you. They don't know who you are. They don't know anything about you. And they couldn't sit in your chair tomorrow and survive 5 seconds doing what you do.
Despite the fact that you don't let these people define you, let's just acknowledge the fact that in 2016, you and I are having this conversation.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
It's more than disturbing.
And it's disgusting.
Why should anybody give a damn that you do sports? Why should this even be pointed out? Oh, look, Amy Lawrence is a sportscaster. Would we say, oh, look, Amy Lawrence is an accountant?
No, and I think part of that is the forum, which is that sports fans themselves reserve the right to be irrational and delusional and completely illogical and off the hook and over the top. I mean, this has nothing to do with me, but I compare it to people who send tweets, death threats to athletes who mess up in a moment of pressure.
Right.
I mean, it's ridiculous. So it's not just me. I'm not at all suggesting it's only female. Men get it too. It's just that the type of harassment that women get is so pointed and as I said, disturbing that you just wonder how people can possibly look in the mirror. But at the same time, again, there's no accountability. So they can say whatever they want. It never comes back to bite them or to force them to face any type of consequence.
What's it been like for you in terms of dealing with male peers? Has there been a welcome mat put out for you?
More now. There's still, though, this feeling of isolation because there is no one else out there like me, or very few. And so I will never fit in. And I wrote in the blog post, you actually quoted my personal blog post where I talked about this. I noted there that it took me a long time to get to the point where I realized being unique, being different, not being like everyone else.
Is a great thing.
Right. Not fitting in is actually my best quality, and something that I can really use to make my show stand out. I would say that the best moments that I have in my career are the ones where I hear from coaches and from athletes and from others who have done the work at the highest level. Hey, I listened to your show. I mean, that's all I need to be validated, because, you know, they're not going to waste their time and listen to something that they don't have to. But to hear that from inside the industry really matters to me. Now, there's still some... It's changed a lot. I mean, when I made the jump to full-time sports in Oklahoma, there was one guy who worked in the business in Oklahoma City, which is a top 50 market, who would speak to me. Most of them just completely ignored me. Now they claim me. And funny story, I just was in Houston for the Final Four. And Oklahoma, University of Oklahoma, was there for the first time since I had worked in the city.
Oh, there was
and
something. Destiny.
All of these men who I had at the time competed against and really wouldn't acknowledge me were giving me hugs. Oh, it's so good to see you. We love to listen to you.
You're talking to me.
Yeah, my show is now carried there. So my name is obviously something different now across the country. I don't resent that. It's fine with me. It actually makes me laugh. It makes me laugh, Sandy. I mean, how I will never forget how I used to be treated. So now in 2016, when a host doesn't go out of his way to support me, and it happens inside my own company, I mean, it's fine. It's not a big deal. As long as I have the bosses who... just tell you, I hit the jackpot with my bosses at CBS. I'm sure you know, as a female in radio and TV, you go through some of the god-awful nightmare boss stories. And I'm so thankful for Eric Spitz and Mark Chernoff, who not only came to me at ESPN and said, we're huge fans, would you please come work to us? Work with us. We're starting a new network. But they support me every step of the way. And so it really does help when you have allies and advocates like that. And it makes you not worry about the small stuff and some of the people who are at your same level who don't necessarily support you or see things the way that you do. I'm not afraid of competition. I've carved my way here, but to have bosses who believe in you and allow you to be who you are,
exactly,
as opposed to try to stick you into a box, mm-hmm, where you don't fit, mm-hmm, that has been invaluable. And I tell them all the time, I wonder if they think I'm disingenuous, but I tell them all the time, I hit the jackpot when I got you as bosses.
I think that's terrific.
Oh, they're awesome.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Amy Lawrence, who's the host of CBS Sports Radio's late night program After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Share with us some of your career highlights.
It's interesting that one of them, we just passed the anniversary. Sandy, this is, I tell you this story, and it's not even a sports story, but it means so much to me. We just hit the 5-year anniversary of our military finding Osama bin Laden and killing him. And it came, you know, 10 years roughly after 9/11. And I was working at ESPN Radio. Even now, as I tell you this story, I'm getting chills. I was working at ESPN Radio that night, and I was doing a national broadcast studio host of Sunday Night Baseball, which meant we had the entire country. So we weren't an alternate broadcast. Every station along the network was carrying Sunday Night Baseball. And the news starts to come in on the AP wire, and we realize this is legitimate. I mean, this is serious. It was confirmed by a couple of sources, at least the reports that were accurate. And I had the privilege of breaking into a national broadcast on ESPN Radio and telling our country that the man responsible for the worst terror attack in our history was dead. He was gone. We got him. And I remember shaking in my chair, mm-hmm, the significance of that moment and being able to every couple of minutes break in, even if it wasn't new details, but just to tell people, mm-hmm, we got him. We got the son of a bitch. I mean, that meant so much to me. And so we just marked that 5-year anniversary, and I will never forget that moment. That is the single most important moment of my career. It has nothing to do with sports. It just happened that I was.
Doesn't matter. Network. Yes, I understand that. And I've had some of those myself too.
Yeah.
But talk now sports wise, sure. What really just felt like you died and went to heaven?
Oh gosh. Well, working for Westwood One Radio last year, getting to do my first ever NCAA tournament games on Westwood One Radio Network. I was the first female to do play-by-play. So I did the Women's Big East Championship, which was awesome. And then I did an Elite Eight game, so a regional final, as it turned out, in Oklahoma City. So neat synergy there. A game that the winner used to get into the Final Four. I mean, it was the most high-profile game I've ever done in college hoops. So that was definitely a career highlight. And I don't mind telling you, at the start of that first one, I was also shaking the nerves. I mean, for me, it just means I still care. But there are times when, in those moments, you have to get your voice and your body under control so that it doesn't sound like you're nervous
on the air.
But that was pretty amazing, too. This is maybe not a big deal to some, but it was to me, to be invited on CBS This Morning for the first time last year during the NBA Finals. And they've continued to bring me back, which is really cool. Covering my first Super Bowl week. So bosses sent us to San Francisco. We took our show on the road. And because of my hours, when I go on the air at night, it's 11 o'clock on the West Coast. And San Francisco Bay Area, KNBR, is one of our biggest affiliates. They treated us like royalty there. We did our show three nights from San Francisco. The cab drivers, multiple cab drivers, the concierge at the hotel, the doorman, the person I got
flipping
my coffee
out when
from,
they saw
they
who,
all
who,
well, they didn't,
when they met
they
you?
Didn't recognize my face, but when I heard when they heard me, I started talking. Do
Isn't
you do
great?
A show at night? And so really amazing. So to be there and to be part of the football fraternity for the first time, be on the inside, not only is it a media convention when you go and you cover Super Week, but it's also a football convention, and to sit down with Hall of Famers and to pick their brains about the biggest issues in football, you just get the sense that you have arrived. It was my first time covering Super Bowl week. And so it was this kind of this plateau. Wow. I've been climbing
You're
my
climbing,
entire
yes,
career.
Yes, exactly. You
and
got
I
to the mountaintop.
I got here where I can stop and look around. And I think for the first time in my life, these last 2 years, since I got the promotion and I'm now doing five nights a week, I no longer have that sense of gotta go, gotta climb, always striving, always trying to prove myself. I finally got to the point where I can breathe and I can relax. And this is not the end all to be all. I still have goals, but to know that the last 15 years of working and building, the blood, the sweat, the tears, all worth it. I wouldn't change a thing, no matter how bad it's been. All of it's worth it.
How do you handle the hours?
I don't have much of a social life right now, so that's tough. I mean, I'm not going to lie about it, but the trade-offs are phenomenal. We have the entire network overnight, and as I say, we start at 11 o'clock on the West Coast, which means we are reacting immediately after the games that have just finished. By the time I get to my final hour, it's 5 o'clock on the East Coast, and all of these people who didn't stay up to watch those late games are waking up and hanging out
you.
With you mm-hmm. for the first time. Mm-hmm. And so I really love the fact that we sweep the entire country. I mean, there are a lot of people who work overnight, who drive overnight. I mentioned the coaches and the fraternity, the sports fraternity, when they travel after late games. I hear from a lot of players and coaches that they tune in and they listen. So I love the hours as a broadcaster. In terms of your physical body, though, you know.
Well, you look good,
hard.
Amy. You're
so lying. You're so lying.
I'm really not.
You just can't
see
these big bags in my eyes because of the mood lighting in here.
Oh, that's what we got, good mood lighting. If I was your fairy godmother, what would you want from me?
I want to get married and have kids. And that's one of these sacrifices that I've made for this business. I'm not saying it's required, but for me, in order to get to where I am now, I had to put everything I had into it. And I'm still doing it. Here I am. I'm no longer a spring chicken, and I've been in this business a long time, and I want the other side. I want the personal life. It's just, how do you do it? How do you meet people? How do you do it? So that's a part of me that I'm missing. Mm-hmm. I've got a brother. I've got several siblings, but a brother who has two nieces, and I love those girls like they were my own kids, and right now they're my motivation to be a professional, to be excellent, to be a strong, successful, independent woman. But I also want to have my own family. And so while I don't believe in fairy godmothers, that's the part of my life that I'm still missing, that I'm still looking for. In terms of career, NBA play-by-play is still the dream job. So at some point, I anticipate making that jump. I mean, mm-hmm. there is one woman who works in NBA, but she works in TV. She's a color analyst for a TV broadcast of, I believe it's Charlotte. I want to do radio play-by-play, which there are no females doing radio play-by-play of any professional sport at any level, men. And so that's still, as I talked about, the vast wasteland. And that's, mm-hmm. I'm determined to get there.
But it's reachable. Reachable goal.
It is reachable. It just takes one team to take a chance, to take that risk on me and give me the opportunity. And I know that I can do it.
I know that you can do it too. You are a dynamo.
You.
It has been nothing short of my pleasure and the
Sorry.
Fastest 30 minutes that I've
that
ever
was it?
Had. It's over. I mean, you are amazing and so engaging and warm and friendly.
Thank
I I feel like I'm gushing. I don't.
Well, you should
gush.
Listen to the show because we do this 20 hours a week.
I don't know how you do it, woman.
I mean, a podcast. You could try the podcast.
I could do that. God bless you,
Amy. Channel.
That's excellent. Thanks so much for sharing your life with us.
Well, thank you for being interested.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And if you know of an interesting woman who you think should be interviewed, contact us at www.sandyclineshow.com.